Alrighty then, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell will be making an appearance as well. And it's another stormy evening here on the North Shore, but not too bad. This one's moving by kind of quickly, and I think we're going to get out of this. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed. Anyway, let's say hi to Tim. How you doing, Tim?
Good evening, Rick. It's raining rather profusely here in Beverly at the moment.
Yeah. We're supposed to get some, a little bit of heavy rain, but it hasn't been bad, and the wind hasn't been, knock on wood, it hasn't been nearly as bad as was predicted, thank goodness. And according to Harvey, we got about an hour of this left, so it'll start to tone down after that. How's everybody?
Everybody is well here in Beverly, and hoping everybody is the same in Gloucester.
Yeah. So far, so good, and the numbers are very low in Gloucester. We're going to give those tomorrow during connections, but very, very low, and we hope to keep it that way. I don't want to jinx anything. Sadly, we have lost, I believe, three people, which is you know, a tragedy in and of itself. So hopefully this thing will move along and get the hell out of here. Tonight we're going to talk with Athletic Director Brian LaFada of Gloucester High School and check in with him. Maybe a quick recap on winter sports, to see where his head is right now in terms of what's happening or, in fact, not happening. And then Bill Newell will be talking with Gus Balow, a St. John's Prep athlete. He'll also be chatting with Linfield native Jonathan Luters, who is to be playing for the Navigators once the Navigators, North Shore Navigators baseball season gets underway. That's the North Shore Futures League. And then later on, we'll talk with Gary Larrabee and Mike Grenier. Gary will be chatting about golf and how the industry is taking such a hit, the sport is. And Mike, we're going to talk with Mike a little bit about Hall of Fame selections and other things in terms of the NBA. So, Tim, I just want to ask you, you ever hear of a guy named Sterling Moss?
Yes. Well, I remember him when I was a kid, because in the late 50s, early 60s, he was one of the dominant driving forces in race car. And there was several famous British races who you were certainly aware of at that time, and he was one of them. Parley Jones was an American racer of the same ilk, and even as a kid, you just knew who these guys were. Not that everybody was a big follower of the international F1 circuit, but you just knew of the notoriety of those individuals because I was reading his obituary today. I was reading his, well, not obituary, but story on him online, and he had just that flair. Pinelli Jones had that rugged American style. You know, and the European drivers generally have this kind of sophistication that that they took to the racetrack, and certainly he represented the finest of British racing during that time period. So to mention Moss is to immediately recognize race car driver.
Well, Sir Sterling was my favorite driver probably of all time, although A.J. Foyt is right up there. But I loved Sterling Moss when I was a kid. I had read about Juan Manuel Fangio, who was considered to be the greatest race driver of the first half or better of the 20th century. Fangio was an incredible F1 driver. But then Sterling Moss came along and bettered him in terms of records and so on. Never became driver of the year, never won the World Cup, but he won almost 50% or 40-45% of all the races he was ever in. And he drove in over something like 500 races, many of them Formula One. And you're right, the model Ian Fleming has of James Bond is partly based, in my opinion, on Sterling Moss because of his sophistication, and he was the quintessential F1 European race car driver, and he won the first British Grand Prix as an Englishman. He was the first guy to do it for England.
Yep.
Just a classy dude and a great, great race car driver.
Yes, he was.
And the other ones, they mentioned, I remember Jackie Brabham, I remember Graham Hill. Graham Hill, I believe.
Graham Hill, another one, yep.
Yep, and he was another one of those sophisticates with a little David Niven mustache. Jackie Stewart,
exactly.
You know, just it was a special time, and I don't follow F1 anymore, sadly, but for me, Stirling Moss set the standard, and I didn't realize he was 90, and he was, till this week, still with us.
Yeah, you know, the thing about F1 driving today is the cars are so complicated and so technologically advanced. They truly were the, to draw a comparison, you had your piston-powered airplane fighter pilots of World War II, and then you had your jet fighter pilots of the later 60s, 70s, and today, where the planes keep getting more sophisticated, you know, fly-by-wire, all this stuff, and you're really, really not flying the planes. The pilots in World War I, World War II really had to fly those planes. And the race car drivers of the Stirling Moss, Graham Hill era really had to drive those cars.
They were the greatest.
You had a gas gauge and a speedometer, and that was it.
I'll tell you, one of the best movies I've ever seen was a movie called Grand Prix with James Gardner. And all those guys that we just talked about were in that movie, including Lorenzo Bandini before he was killed. Just an amazing group of race car drivers. And Jim Garner drove his own car in that movie, did his own stunts.
Yep. And that had to be a thrill, you know, and it was one of the things I think that helped sell that movie was the fact that they actually had all those real race car drivers participating in the movie itself.
Yeah, that was...
It lent it such an air of credibility and reality.
And that was in it was called Cinemax. Was it Cinemax?
It was
Cinemax. It was the 180-degree screen. It was half of the Omni Theater, and there were three screens that wrapped around you, and it was just unbelievable. That was in, it was in Boston. I forget the name of that theater there. Exeter Street Theater. That's what it was. That's where 2001: A Space Odyssey was also released in that big wraparound screen. That was amazing. Well, anyway, a toast to. To the great Stirling Moss. He was awesome and one of my early sports heroes after Fangio. And I, you know, ask kids who Juan Manuel Fangio was. Oh, well. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back. We'll check in with your old buddy Brian LaFada. And we'll got lots to do here on North Shore Sports Night. We appreciate your being with us. Have any suggestions, comments, the comments and suggestions send along to me, and the compliments at msonewsports@gmail.com. Complaints, send them on to Tim Kearns. All right, we'll be right back. What's that?
Thank you very much.
All right, I was supposed to pot down your mic. I was too late. We'll be right back.
Sports.com, and this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News. Politics.
You'll love the Bradford Tavern in Rowley as they feature a menu to please everyone. Start your meal with your choice from a dozen delicious appetizers. Also soups and fresh salads. Dinner some haddocks, salmon, lobsters, and fish tacos. Plus a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps. Let the Bradford Tavern host your events or functions set in unique spaces. Open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. The Bradford Tavern, Route 133 Rowley and BradfordTavern.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Check out live sporting events on MSO News Sports and exclusive interviews with coaches and players. When it comes to local news and sports, MSO News Sports keeps you connected to the big stories.
All right, if I push all the buttons right, we should be able to connect with everybody. Let's say hello to the athletic director for Gloucester High School, Brian LaFada. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, considering.
Yeah,
how are you guys doing?
Considering, ain't that the truth? We're all right.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Tim, how you doing, bud?
I'm good.
All right, so the thing is, I was gonna talk about winter sports, but I'm not even sure I'm gonna do that. We did cover the hockey team, and I know that they just missed upsetting Lincoln Sudbury in that overtime game. Just an incredible, incredible season for the Gloucester High School Fishermen. So I did want to mention that. You were at that game, weren't you, Brian?
Yep. I was at that one. It was a very exciting game. I mean, they seemed to have it in control early on, but I mean, Lincoln Sudbury was a tough team, deep team, experienced team, and they squeaked it out in the end. They deserved it, but our boys played very well that day.
Absolutely. Well, now we get to this stuff, and I know Tim's got some questions, as do I, but one of the things I was wondering about, Brian, is we're making a circuit talking with directors of athletics in the high schools, and one of the things I'm interested in is we're doing remote learning now, or at least it's beginning, at least there's remote instruction. I don't know how much learning is going on. I presume it's working okay.
Yes.
Is there also remote instruction in terms of sports? I know that you can't have organized activities on the field, but certainly coaches would want to be in touch with their athletes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We actually have just started up in the past week and a half doing some virtual online conditioning with some of our various coaches and various seasons or programs, and opening up to all of our student-athletes. We, like you said, there are restrictions. We are out of season for most sports, and in reality, spring sports haven't officially started, so they really can't be having instruction or practices with having the kids use any equipment specific. So we're just doing general conditioning for all the kids to, number one, help them physically, but number two, help them mentally through all this to try and keep them in a routine of working out or doing some physical activity. So, like I said, we just actually about 2 hours ago wrapped up our fifth session that we've done. The first couple we only did with kind of a trial beta group of our student athletes to see how it went. Zoom is obviously getting to be a very popular tool out there for all different industries, and that's what we're using here as well. So we have the coaches on there running a workout using usually a video that we follow and instruct with, and then today we had over 30 different athletes on there covering 16 different sports. So it's great because they're interacting with their teammates and interacting with their friends and the coaches, and it's keeping them busy.
Tim?
Right, certainly with everything shut down and basically put on hold, what's the biggest thing that's taking up your time during the day? Because you're going to have to, if and when the kids go back, and we don't even know if that's going to happen. So if there's no back to school, there's no spring sports. What are your fellow ADs doing right now in order to prepare for the eventuality of maybe a reopening? And again, you know, May 4th does not look good for an opening, considering, you know, they're talking about we're still going to hit the peak of the surge, and you're talking now you're late April. 1st of May is not going to be a time to bring the kids back to school.
Right. Yeah, it's very difficult at this point. Myself, obviously, as a coach for many years, my big philosophy was always to worry about what you can control. Whether you're on a field or court, the ice, whatever it is, you can't worry about the other team. You can't worry about the officials, the referees, any of that. And unfortunately, we're in that game right now. The only thing we can control is, obviously, and have the kids control is practice social distancing or physical distancing and staying safe and just following the guidelines put ahead. So that's about all the kids can do. As far as the athletic directors, we're almost in that same pattern. I mean, I know a lot of us are just getting little odd and end jobs done that probably wouldn't get done. It'd be so busy this time of year. So we are catching up on some projects. I've done a few online trainings on other things. We are going to somewhat wait. Every conference is different on how they would handle scheduling and everything. Obviously, it all comes down from the MIAA, how long the season will be. Obviously, right now, May 4th is the target date when they go back to school that we would start sports. It doesn't look great. What's that?
Are you playing with, like, a number of tentative scenarios where if we go back on May 4th, here's what we're going to do? If it's pushed back to X number of days, here's where we'll go, here's how we'll abbreviate it, so that you already have a set of plans in place that you can automatically go to?
We have a little bit. We've discussed it myself when this first went down, and this was before getting pushed back to May 4th. Myself, I was just, even after a week of being stuck inside, I was chomping at the bit, so I put together some alternative plans of the team sports and how we could do stuff. But then from that, all of a sudden, we got pushed back again. And so at this point, we do have another Northeast Conference AD meeting this week coming up. We'll be on Zoom or Google Meets and virtually meet and discuss it. We kind of find that you don't want to go ahead and put this whole schedule together and then it just gets kind of taken apart. In all reality, it doesn't take that long to put a abbreviated schedule together. So maybe this Thursday we discuss it. It might be something we put together, a shortened season, whether it's just a conference schedule, maybe you just play your side of the NEC or however it might be. So it's something that we have discussed, but there's nothing set in stone, just because it's just like everything. It's life right now. Everything's so fluid and changing every day that we're not going to just put all our eggs in one basket or really start putting too much into it for it to just end up getting tossed aside.
Brian, what do you do for the seniors who probably won't be playing? I mean, I'm taking maybe a pessimistic view, but, you know, it looks really harsh. Anything special for them in terms of wrapping up their high school careers, or is it still, at this point, just wait and see?
Oh, it's wait and see right now, but then behind the scenes and everything, and those are some of the other things that myself and other ADs are doing. You can see them on social media. Some schools are starting to honor different seniors in different ways, and that's what I plan on doing. We have a great photographer that covers tons of sports, so I have lots of photographs of the various athletes in just my year and a half, just under 2 years of being in the position. So I'm planning on putting some stuff together very soon, and once we get word that maybe, I mean, if the kids aren't going to have a senior night anymore or anything like that, we'll definitely go above and beyond what we usually would say on the social media aspect of it all.
Right.
To really promote the kids, because this is all different. Myself, from Gloucester High School, we don't, most schools use Twitter, but I also use Facebook and Instagram.
Yep.
And so it covers, I mean, the kids really, like I just posted today, a few more pictures of the kids that participated in the online virtual workouts. And just when you start putting the pictures out there of the kids, not just like a tweet or anything, the student athletes love it. Their classmates love it. The families love it. The parents, most of them are on Facebook. They might not be Instagram. If you cover Twitter and everything, Twitter's better. It's great with the media. They're working with guys like you and everything. Information gets out. But, well, there's something, and that's what I plan on doing. I'm working with some of the coaches, just verifying who are our seniors, what they did over the past 4 years, and get some good photos of them, maybe even with their parents, just like we would do on a senior night, just to honor those individuals for their careers.
That sounds awesome, Brian, and I know you do go the extra mile with the social media. The pictures sounds like a great idea. We're losing you. You're fading out with the your cell phone. Anything else you want to mention, Brian?
No. I mean, I just, like, we're trying to pitch it all of our kids. Hopefully everyone's staying safe right now, and social distancing, we're trying to explain to them that hopefully the safer they are now, the sooner we can get on the field or whatever it might be, even if it isn't the spring season, which we are still hoping for. Maybe something very shortened. But hopefully just everybody stays safe and we get outside soon enough.
All right, Brian, thanks so much. You stay safe, too. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Very, very good.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, that is Brian Lafata, who is the Director of Athletics at Gloucester High School. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to check in with Bill Newell, who will be talking with Gus Bailo. All right, you got it? Okay. I'm just making sure we got it. Hold on, Coach. Don't go anywhere. So we'll be right back. This is North Shore Sports Night.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. MSONewsports.com. Gus Bailo from St. John's Prep is joining us. He is a senior. And Gus, welcome. Good to be talking with you.
Good to be talking with you, Bill. Thank you for having me on.
We've our paths have crossed numbers of times over the last several years, whether it be at St. John's Prep or at the North Shore Navigator Games, where you have been the last number of years as well. But Gus, you have a unique so-called position, if you will, at St. John's Prep as a senior this year, a student, But for the last number of years, you've also been their PA guy. And if I want to know what's happening with St. John's Athletics, I'm going to you on your Twitter account, too. So tell us a bit about how all that got started.
Yeah, so I started this my sophomore year. I knew I wanted to do broadcasting going into St. John's Prep. It was a passion that I had. I did not know it was going to be of this magnitude of doing all the games and all that. But Mr. O'Leary, who was the former athletic director, reached out to me at the end of my freshman year, and he said, would you like to be the voice next year? And I said, of course. And from that time, I've been doing all different kinds of games throughout the last 3 years, sophomore year, junior year, and then obviously senior year, with doing all the different sports. And I've been doing football and soccer in the fall, basketball and hockey in the winter, and then baseball and lacrosse in the spring. So it's a good mix of sports, and it's a great opportunity to do it at a school like St. John's where the athletic culture is very high. So it's awesome and a great opportunity.
Yeah, they built that wellness center just for you, Gus, I'm thinking, right?
I don't know. I don't think they built it just for me. It's a great facility, and we've had it for – this is the third year we've had this. So it worked out perfect timing for me because the first year that we had the facility was the first year I took over as the voice. So it worked out perfect for me. But obviously, it's a very nice facility with pretty much everything. We got obviously the basketball court's been in full use really since its opening back in August or September of 2017. And then obviously we have the weight room. The amount of growth that's had over the last couple of years is phenomenal. So it's an amazing facility. It's grown so much in the last 3 years, and I'm very excited for its future with more programs being built and just the overall culture. I'm very excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, and the pool and everything there. It's funny, you know, 2 years ago, Gus, it's one full year ago from now, Lynn English was playing a basketball game over there, a tournament game one night.
Yeah.
And they were going to be playing in the new wellness center. Well, there was a freak power outage in a little bit of Danvers, and it impacted the new wellness center, but not the old gymnasium. So they ended up at the very last minute moving that game over to the old gym. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember doing that game. I was going to be doing the PA for it. We found out right before that the game was going to have to get moved. So we had to tell both teams, Lynn English and I think it was Andover.
Yeah.
We had to tell them, like, hey, we're going to move over to the other gym. And we thankfully got the game in, but we got the game in because I'm very thankful in the old gym. I mean, obviously it's not ideal, but we made the best of it. And you know, that's a situation that you really can't predict for. But, yeah, I do remember that.
I want to ask you about what's ahead for you, but I'm going to hold that question for a moment here. We're talking with Gus Bailo, senior at St. John's Prep. Gus, if there was a memorable game or two for you over at the Prep, what might that have been over the years to watch and do the PA for or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of great games I've done over the years. Hopefully some more, but, I mean, obviously with the situation on right now, we just don't know. You know, there's been a lot of great games over the years I've done, and I've watched a lot of great games. I PA'd a lot of great games, but they all bring their unique taste to it. And what I mean by that is, you know, whether it's a game-winning play or whether it's some kind of tribute before the game or something, it definitely makes it memorable. But if there is one game I had to pick off the top of my head, one game I remember doing a PA for was definitely my junior year when St. John's football was in the Division I North Final. And they were playing, they were playing Central Catholic. And it was the first time that the Prep is hosting a North Final in a long time. And it was a great crowd that day. The Prep won 21-0. And they were going to the Super Bowl for the first time since 2012. So that was a great game. I remember doing PA. And I think any of the big games I've done over the years, like the hockey game against BC High a few weeks ago, when they were in the Super 8, that was a great game to cover and watch.
Mm-hmm.
The football state championships were great, too. I mean, all the sports had some great games over the years. So it's been great. All these games have brought their own memories to it.
Well, I'm thinking we're going to hear more from you in the future because, Gus, you're headed out to the University of Kansas. And tell us about the program you're enrolled in there and what's ahead for you come September.
Yeah, so I am planning to attend the University of Kansas in September, and that is basically going to be It's a journalism school now. They have the journalism school that they just redid this past winter. And so everything's brand new, which is great. And the reason why I picked it is just because I liked the new program that they have, and I also liked the pride that the school has. There's a lot of pride that goes into the school, the athletic program. I'm sure everyone knows KU basketball. I mean, it's a big thing out there, and there's obviously a lot of things that we're going for, and the campus is just nice, too. I mean, it is a little far away from home, but it's a great school, and I'm very excited to head out there.
You know, when I was your age too, Gus, I always remember I had some favorite announcers that I used to, kind of admire and kind of study. Let's put it that way. But who are some announcers today that you kind of say, this guy's pretty good or this person's very good?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of great announcers out there. I want to be like one of those one day. You know, hopefully that would be like the dream. But I like Al Michaels. I've respected Al Michaels for a long time. Sean McDonough, I'm actually, my dad knows Sean McDonough personally. So he's been doing some college football games over the last couple of years, and I really like how he calls games. So Sean McDonough is, one up there as well. Al Michaels, like I said before. I also like Jim Nantz too. Over at CBS. There's a lot of great announcers though out there. Like Bob Costas too. I've respected him, Mike Tirico. There's a lot of great announcers.
Yeah, you picked up some good ones, that's for sure. Well, Gus, I guess let me just ask you to circle back to the situation that we're in right now. As a student, as a senior at St. John's Prep, obviously you're not in school, so what's keeping you guys busy now?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the middle of remote learning right now. St. John's is on remote operations for the time being until the situation, hopefully dies down. But the community has been really amazing so far. Everyone at St. John's has been great, dealing with the situation. And the school leadership has been, unbelievable. They're doing everything that they can to make the situation the best. But we're on remote learning right now. Our last day is on May 1st, which is what it was supposed to be before this whole thing broke out. And I think the big thing is that we're hoping that we have a prom and graduation and all that. But we're going to have to see because we don't know, obviously, what's going to happen with the pandemic and with the situation. But we're hoping that we have a prom and graduation sooner rather than later. And obviously, too, I'm hoping that we have the spring season. But, I mean, we're just going to have to see.
Well, Gus, hang on the line with me for a moment, but I just wanted to point out, I've been looking to do this with you for a long time. You are a real standout, and congrats to you. You've been, for your high school career. I think you're going to be very successful beyond that. And again, thanks for taking a few minutes to join us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate it.
Gus Bailo from St. John's Prep here on MSO News Sports.
This is MSONewsSports.com.
Jonathan Luter is from Linfield is joining us, and from the North Shore Navigators, and from Seton Hall University, but he is in Linfield as we speak right now. Jonathan, hi, and welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, Jonathan, I want to ask you just to begin with about the being you were at shortstop at Linfield, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and Cape Ann League Player of the Year. It's a lot of success last year in Linfield playing spring sports, but it looks like that's kind of where you'll be for the Navigators if you get to play there this year.
Yeah, I'll probably play in the middle infield. When I was at Seton Hall, I played most second. I played a little bit of short, but I was mostly playing second base. I'll just do whatever gets me playing, though, whatever gets me playing.
Tell me about the Seton Hall piece. So this is your freshman year, right, at Seton Hall?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, so tell me how much of the season you got into playing.
I think we got 14 games. I think 14 games. We just got back from our spring break trip in California, and then we opened up our new stadium for our first home game on Wednesday, and Thursday evening we kind of got worried about the closing down of the season, and then that was pretty much it. I went home Saturday, so I think we got like 14 games in or something like that.
Oh my! Wow, you were riding high back from California, new stadium. How had you been doing with the team?
Say again.
How were you doing with the team?
Oh, everyone on the team was great. I love the guys. I had the guys in the middle infield were great, especially too. Helped me like learn the ropes, kind of learn the plays, the signs, and all of that. And they're just really high quality guys, as well as everyone else on the team. Really good individuals. I like them a lot. It was kind of sad to kind of cut it short, especially for the seniors. That's kind of tough being a senior. But luckily, they got an extra year eligibility back, which is good.
So tell me about, so now you're back in Linfield, and you're and all the courses are obviously online at this point, correct?
Yeah.
So what are your academic interests at Seton Hall?
Well, I'm a psychology major, and right now in class, I'm just taking like more general classes for your freshman year. I'm taking like an English class, an ethics class I'm taking. Taking a psychology course. The film requirement that I'm taking, and then there's stats as well. So those classes are now all online. The teacher has been very accommodating, helpful with the transition, so that's been making the change fairly smooth, which is really good.
Gotcha. We're talking with Linfield's Jonathan Luders, who is a baseball player, Seton Hall, Linfield High School. Jonathan, what are you hearing from your Linfield neighbors, if you will? I'm sure you're still in touch with some of the kids that might be high school seniors, or what are they thinking right now?
I think they just want to. It kind of ended very abruptly for them, because I think they kind of had like a regular day of school, and then they just didn't go back the next day, and that was kind of it. So if that's like their last day of their senior year, it's kind of unfortunate for them. So I think they would kind of want to go back to kind of end out their senior year on a high note. But as of right now, I think it's May 4th. They're suspended too, but I think they're thinking they're probably going to be a little longer than that.
Tell me about your I'm going to follow up with the last couple of questions at Linfield Baseball. So what are some of the highlights as from the team point of view, and add your personal highlights as well from Linfield Baseball from the last several years?
Oh, man. Well, we made, as a team, each of the 4 years, my freshman year, I was on JV my freshman year. I got called up to varsity, and we made it to the North Final. Sophomore year, North Final. All 4 years made it to the North Final. That was pretty amazing for each of the 4 years to make it that far. I think each team was definitely special to be a part of. Even though my freshman year wasn't like really part of the team, I did get in that bat, which my first like varsity at bat. That was a pretty memorable moment. I was called in to bunt. With like a man on first, because the game was tied, or we were down by one, and I ended up walking. So that was pretty cool. Sophomore year, we had an awesome team, had so much fun. All those guys are great. I'm still in touch with one of those seniors on that team, and one of them playing college baseball. And that was just such a fun year. Junior year, kind of same deal, and senior year was always special. That's your senior year; those are guys you grew up playing with. And I thought each year was just kind of special. Each of them had like a different like. Team kind of environment, but it was just so much fun. Just so much fun. High school baseball is awesome. Coach O'Brien does a great job, really running the program there, and just a special experience for sure. And I'm truly grateful for that.
Exactly. You're right, Coach O'Brien. It's a very strong program, and building a rich tradition there in baseball at Linfield High School. Jonathan, anything else to share with us about what are you doing to stay in shape? Let me conclude with that. Out running.
Yeah, so I have a makeshift gym in my basement. I have some dumbbells. I've been doing mostly all body workouts, like just body weight kind of stuff. The pull-up bar. I live on a dead end, so I can do sprints on my dead end street, which is good. I have a ladder, do like agility work. I can do ground balls out in front of my house. I can't really hit as much. I mean, I can swing in front of a mirror, but not really hit. Or I have to like talk to my dad and go down a field, but the field's kind of closed down. So just try to do whatever I can. And I think it's for the conditions right now, I think it's pretty good. So just got to continue just doing that and just trying to stay in shape for the summer if it does happen.
All right, Jonathan, always great talking with you, by the way. And thanks so much for joining us. And, let's hope there is a summer season this year with the Navs. And Jonathan, again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Jonathan Luders with us from Linfield, from Seton Hall, and from the North Shore Navigators.
All right, we are back, and it is time to be joined by Gary Larrabee now, golf historian, sports historian, and golf writer, and of course Tim is back with us. Gary, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
I'm doing fine. Tim's hanging in there. Yeah, it's all a matter of, I think, of just being patient. And this storm looked like it's going to blow over. You haven't had any damage where you live with the wind today, have you, Gary?
No, it was just a little windy, but it was nice and warm, and
yeah.
All the pine trees still standing upright.
That is a good thing. I want to get started. I know Tim will probably take it over for me, thank goodness. But I wanted to get started about the apocalypse article in the Gulf Apocalypse article in the Salem News. And there was a little bit of a mix-up there, and I think it's probably back online now. Online, we could only get, like, the first couple of paragraphs, but I think it's back now. And you alluded to that last week on how devastating this emergency has been to the Gulf scene.
And, you know, the fact that it's been another typical April. We have a couple of nice days, then we have a bunch of lousy days, and we're not missing out that much of golf right now, but the fact remains we're just having to bite the bullet and wait until May 7th to see if the governor will will waive the edict on non-essential golf and make golf a recreational pursuit that we can enjoy while we're staying practicing distancing.
Mm-hmm.
But most important, you know, Rick.
Go ahead, Gary. I'm sorry. Hello, Gary. Hello, Tim.
I'm here.
Did we lose Gary?
I don't know.
Now, but
well, there he is. Yeah, we lost you a little bit, Gary. We lost you for about 35 seconds there or so.
Well, so we just make a point real, real simple that it's April, and we would love to be out there having a chance to play if the weather's good or bad. But we can wait, and hopefully by May 7th, when the governor has to make his decision again as to whether or not golf is able to be played or practiced, we'll be able to do just.
We keep losing him.
Gary,
I'm sorry. We keep losing you. Can I call you back on the landline?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right, let me do that. All right.
Okay, very good.
All right, very good. All right, we're going to try this again. This is good old live radio. All right, let's try this. All right, we'll see if we can get Tim back. Must be the wind.
Why did you call me?
All right, hold on, because I had to get you. Hold on, now I'm going to get Gary back. Hold on. Were you still there? All right, hold on.
Yeah.
All right, be right back. I don't know how this works. Hold on. I thought we were doing so well, too. Oh gosh! We were doing so well, Gary. Oh man! All right, Tim, you there?
Hello.
Gary's here. Tim, you there?
No.
Okay. All right. We're back. All right. So let's get started. What's the agenda for tonight, Gary?
Well, let's talk about Tiger Woods and the fact that we have to wait till November to see if Tiger can win his 16th major, at least to make the Masters his 16th major, and of course we have to wait for. The PGA Championship, I believe, in August. And right now, the U.S. Open has been pushed back to September. So Tiger's being tortured a little bit here because the big story in golf all year will continue to be whether Tiger can win another major and draw even closer to Jack Nicklaus's 18. So the winning game continues. But, of course, they did pay a nice tribute to Tiger over the weekend by replaying his great victory from a year ago yesterday on CBS, and of course was also on WEEI in the afternoon. So that, in many respects, Rick, is where we stand. We're still waiting to play golf and to play tournament golf, but the winning game will just have to continue.
Gary, now I know you were probably glued to the TV watching Tiger win again.
I couldn't have been further away from the TV yesterday afternoon, Tim.
Okay.
I was kind of expecting that.
Go ahead.
I was listening to the radio, to the Talking Heads, over the weekend, and they were discussing the fact that they don't have, at least one side of the argument was, they didn't understand why the golf courses weren't open, because it was one of the few sports where you can actually practice social distancing. You know, you can stand away from each other around the tee box. Most everybody hits away from each other anyways down the fairways. You can socially distance on the greens, and you just repeat that. Me, I would be socially distanced because I'd be spending so much time in the woods anyway.
That's a good point, Tim. Maybe you would be, and maybe I would be as well, but I think the tendency for golfers when they're on the golf course is they're very close together on the tee. They really get to be very close together on the greens. Whether they say they can keep that 6 feet distance, I don't know. But I think that's the last thing they're thinking about once they tee it up on that number one tee. So I think we have to appreciate why we're doing this, because they still don't know how serious this virus can be and how much longer it's going to go and whether it's going to come back for a second surge around the country or around the world. They're just playing it the safe way, and I can appreciate that. But moving right along, I do want to mention something, Rick, and thanks for mentioning it. Giving my column your usual shameless plug, but I do want to congratulate Kevin Wood, who I was near the bottom of my column, kind of buried in the end of the rigmarole. That Kevin Wood has now been as the head golf professional at Salem Country Club for 2 decades, for 20 years. He's going to be beginning his 24th season sometime this year, hopefully. And I think it was just appropriate that we should mention that a low-key fellow. He's a sneaky good player, but he's just been a good professional, head professional for the Salem Country Club membership now for 20 years, and that makes him the second longest serving head pro at Salem, after Bill Barkley, who was the head pro for 33 years from 1948 to 1980, and good for Kevin, because we read about Stephen Delisio, the great amateur player from Salem, who I believe will be turning pro shortly. I'm going to hopefully get confirmation from that from Stephen tomorrow. And of course, we hear a lot about the director of instruction over there, Kirk Hannafeld, who's still an outstanding tournament player at the ripe young age of 63. So, congratulations to Kevin Wood, and happy that he's still. Making the good stuff happen as the man in charge of golf operations at Salem Country Club.
Good stuff. Nice work if you can get it.
Gary,
Tim.
What are course superintendents doing right now around the area? The courses are closed. Are they allowed on the courses? Are they still able to do some course management, repairs, upgrades?
Oh, yes. Maintenance has been allowed to do their duty on a daily basis. And so now they're still cleaning up from the winter, they're cleaning up from all these windstorms. They're, treating the turf the way it needs to be treated on the tees, fairways, and greens, and the rough, and the bunkers. And the bunkers are taking a pretty good beating with all this rain. But they're out there full time, and they've got plenty to do, even though there's no golf being played. They still have to cut the greens per their regular schedule for April. And it's the nature of the business that maintenance must be out there, and thankfully they can be out there until we finally get the members out there so they can play some golf.
You know, a lot of reflection going on right now, Gary, in terms of sports, because there's nothing live to watch. Tim and I were talking about the great Sterling Moss and Juan Manuel Fangio and Jackie Brabham and Jackie Stewart. Have you been now looking back through your files as well?
Oh yes, and there's so much to look back upon. It's a big year, and we'll be reading about it in my columns over the course of the next few months. It's a pretty interesting milestone year. For example, it's the 50th anniversary, which I will be writing about in the next week or two. The 50th anniversary of the most recent All North Shore Final in a Women's State Amateur Championship, and that was 1970. Paula Brophy from United Shoe, Beverly Golf and Tennis in 1970, who's now Paula Brophy Ainsworth, retired but she played from the host club, Barbara Thorner, in the state amateur final of that year. And will we remind a few people about that when we get that into the paper? But that was 50 years ago. Barbara Thorner against Paula Brophy, who's now Paula Brophy Ainsworth, in an all North Shore final. Pretty special, and hard to believe those 50 years have passed. Barbara has passed on. She was a Lynn English gym teacher for many years, but Paula is still going strong up in New Hampshire with her husband, Peter. They were formerly more. Peter retired, and they decided to move up because they love to ski in the winter, so they moved up to Bethlehem, New Hampshire, where they can ski in the winter and they can play golf in the summer.
Gary, you can't go and mention the great series that you had in the Salem News, the retrospective on the Davis High basketball team, their great run of state titles and their dominance in the Northeast Conference about 10 years ago.
Well, actually, Tim, we'll have the final two installments, I believe, tomorrow and Wednesday, which features, of course, the 27-0 Division II state champion team from 2015. So it's really the fifth anniversary of that amazing run, three straight championships in 4 years, never before accomplished by a North Shore school in any of the boys' team in any of the four major sports. So I thought it was appropriate to revisit that a little bit, and thank you for mentioning it. And we'll do it for two more days in the paper, hopefully the next 2 days.
Yeah, and the thing that amazed me about that team is there were no seriously dominant basketball junkie kind of kids. They were like the playground kids who played together all the time. We knew each other. They were tough, hard nosed players, and just went out and beat anybody that stood in front of them.
That's exactly right, and it was just a perfect storm, as I've said before. John Walsh comes in as a rookie head coach, and he almost gets fired before he's five games into his first season. But they made it all happen over that five-year period with some terrific players, and they did have a couple of players who made All-State in George Murray and Devin Harris, which is extraordinary. But no, you're right. It was a mixture of five or six, seven players every year for that five-year period, but especially for the last 4 years, where they won three straight titles in 4 years. They won 20 games 4 years in a row. And you never say never.
Yeah, right.
We never would have believed they would have had any kind of a program like that. Never would believe it would happen again. But one of those extraordinary accomplishments that could never have imagined taking place.
All right, boys, we got to move on to the great Mike Grenier. And, Gary, I think next Monday is Patriots Day, is it not?
I'll be very patriotic, if you will.
I think it is. All right. Well, I'm not sure. So it's up in the air whether we'll be here next Monday or not. But in the meantime, just do the right thing and stay safe.
You as well, guys. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Gary.
Bye,
Gary. Bye, Tim.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, that is Gary Larrabee. We're going to take a quick break. Tim and I will be back with Mike Grenier momentarily if I don't mess things up here once again. So please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com.
All righty, we are back. I can't hear myself, but I can hear the boys here on the line. Mike Grenier has joined us now. Mike, another alum of the Salem News, still active, as is Gary. And, Mike, welcome back to MSO. How are you?
We're doing about as well as could be expected. We're hoping everybody's safe and healthy on the North Shore as much as possible.
So far, so good. I'm knocking on wood here as we do it. It hasn't been certainly as bad as it can be, but it's bad enough, that's for sure. Mike, obviously there's no NBA and there's no college basketball. There was no final, what do you call them, March Madness. But
right. There
was the Hall of Fame selections. And I'm going to start with the only one that I'm really familiar with, and that is Kevin Garnett. Very happy he made it. I wonder what your thoughts are about his Hall of Fame career, and then also the fact that the Celtics are retiring his number.
Well, let's start with the latter comment you just made about him having his number raised to the rafters at the Garden. And some people, you know, the purists, I guess, among Celtics fans, they say he doesn't deserve it because he only played 6 years with the Celtics. But my goodness, I beg to differ. I think he certainly deserves to have his number hung up at the Garden. They won the title in 2008 with Kevin Garnett. Definitely in a 22-year career, one of the most intense players in the history of the league. Had major accomplishments in every facet of the game. Won that title. They could have won more titles if he hadn't been injured the following year when they were like 27-2, I think, starting out the following year. Certainly one of the most accomplished players in NBA history and deserving of going into this Hall of Fame class. And when you think about it, the three top names in his Hall of Fame class, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, who sadly passed away in a helicopter crash back in January, and Tim Duncan, you're talking about 65 years of NBA experience among the three of those guys. So Certainly Garnett belongs with the other big two of Duncan and Kobe Bryant. I have no quibble with any part of Kevin Garnett's game. Belongs with the Celtics in the Celtics rafters. Just a phenomenal of all the years I covered the Celtics, and I go back to 1973, definitely along with Dave Cowens and a couple other guys, the most ferocious competitor of any Celtic or any NBA player that I've ever seen. His focus was so single. He was such a single-minded player, and he brought that intensity to practice every day, let alone the games. And I think he inspired his teammates to play the same way. I don't know, Tim, you and I go back, and Rick, yourself as well, don't you think so? Just even if you watched it from afar on TV, his intensity was certainly obvious at all times.
You know, you think back to when he came in as an 18-year-old and how unfazed he was by the situation that he found himself in, how quickly he established himself in the league. And he's one of the league's top all-time scorers, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh yeah,
and he dragged the Timberwolves along for a long time on his back in basically mediocrity. But he was the one shining light on that team every single year. And you know, if you think of it, the end of his career, how happy could he have been to come to the Celtics and have an opportunity to play and win a championship. And
that's right.
You know,
that's right.
Again,
yeah.
Injuries just again, end of the career, you're wearing down. We've seen it with all the Celtics greats, and we were that close to winning again. And you mentioned that following season when they ran off to that incredible record, and I'll say that was one of the most exciting times that I can remember of late watching the Celtics since the end of the Bird era. I mean, that was must-see TV because you just knew every single night they were going to go out and win.
That's right, and it was a carryover. The great thing, of course, they had won it in 2008. They beat the Lakers. They beat the Lakers by 39 points. Kobe Bryant and the Lakers by 39 points in Game 7 in 2008. So the carryover was you had pretty much the same team in 2008, 2009, and they got off that at an incredible start, like 27-2 or whatever. I might be a win or two off. And then I remember, Tim, they went to, I think it was Utah, and it looked like a harmless, he was up in the air and came down wrong on his leg. And at first they thought he was just going to miss a couple of weeks or 3 weeks or whatever. And it turned out to be basically a season-ending injury. And, you know, he had his injuries after that. But, overall for 6 years. I mean, you know, that year that they won it all, he averaged 20.4. The next year, 15 points, 14.9, 19. He averaged 19.2 points per game as late as 2012. So, you know, he had an incredible segment of his career, six seasons with the Celtics, made a lasting impression with the fans. Even when he comes back now to see a playoff game or to be part of a certain festivities at the Garden, I mean, the Garden fans flock to him to try to get an autograph or to say hello. Just, he made an indelible impression, I think, on Celtics fans in the six seasons that he was here.
Well, you know, he had an infectious personality. I mean, you were drawn to his energy, to his enthusiasm for the game, for his teammates. And I think, you know, he's one of those guys that came late in the career that really valued having that leprechaun, you know, on his jacket.
Yeah, and to the point where I think, Tim, as we all know, once that great big three was broken up, meaning, you know, Ray Allen, and of course, you know, Paul Pierce and Garnett, you know, the way Ray Allen left under the circumstances to go with the Miami Heat, who had LeBron James at the time, Garnett felt very hurt, as did Pierce for a couple of years. They felt very hurt. They felt they betrayed the Celtics, that Ray Allen did. And Kevin Garnett has softened a little bit in the last few months because he knows he's going to the Hall of Fame, but his resentment of Ray Allen lasted for several years. It shows the intensity that he played with and the loyalty he felt to the guys he played. I think Garnett, deep down, felt that that team could have won three or four championships had they remained healthy. You know, so he resented Ray Allen jumping over to the Miami Heat, who were the prime competitors with the Celtics at the Eastern Conference for a couple of years, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, you know, Rick and I talked about the, you know, was Garnett, you know, a Celtic long enough? And I first had my, you know, trepidations. Certainly, you know, a Hall of Famer for the NBA, what he individually accomplished, and then what he was able to do later as a part of a team with a better balance of talent around him. And that showed you just how dominant he could help make a good team. You know, I'm talking here, you know, and I didn't think he was here for 6 years.
No, I didn't realize that, yeah.
Longer than I thought.
Yeah.
But again, the injury's kind of like when you're out of the picture from the team, you sort of forget about the length of time a guy might actually be there. But, again, you know, you look up in the rafters and there aren't many guys up there that, again, like you said, matched his intensity beyond Dave Collins and maybe Larry Bird. But, you know, Collins would rip your face off if you gave him the opportunity.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. There's no question. I imagine if Dave Collins had played with Kevin Garnett. My goodness. They would have ripped everybody's face off in the entire league. And, you know, as far as the guys who are up in the rafters, I mean, certainly some guys that are up in the rafters perhaps don't belong there in terms of individual accomplishment. I go back, when I was a little kid, Jim Luskatov, who was a rough, tough guy, played in the front court when those 1960s Celtics champ with Bill Russell. Now, I got to know Luskatov when I became a sports writer at the old Beverly Times and then the Salem News. Great guy, but in terms of his stats and his individual accomplishments, he really didn't contribute that much. He was part of a great team with a young Havlicek, with Sam Jones, with Bob Cousy, with Tom Heinsohn. He was like a complimentary piece, but he certainly didn't have the impact in any game that a Kevin Garnett would have had over a six-year period. So I'm not trying to denigrate Jim Luskatov and his contribution. I'm just saying that he did not put up all-star stats or anything of the sort like Kevin Garnett did. And of course, Kevin Garnett, you know, was really part of that big three with Paul. I mean, those three together, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Garnett, I mean, it was phenomenal what they were able to do.
I'm glad you pointed it out, Gary, because I look at those names and I see, you know, Havlicek and I see Russell, and they were lifelong Celtics, and I didn't realize Garnett was here that long as well, and that's a good point you made. Not only Luskatov, but there's a few others up there, and I wonder if that was part of either Walter Brown or Red Auerbach's idea or genius to build a culture by putting those numbers up there. When people come into the gym, they'd see those, and there's a little bit of an intimidation factor.
There's no question. I think, Rick, I'm sure Auerbach had a lot to do with the guys that whose numbers were raised to the rafters were major contributors to a team-oriented culture.
Yes, right. Stats be damned.
They weren't necessarily great scorers.
Yep.
Didn't necessarily put up great stats, but they fit the culture of what Red Auerbach wanted a team to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they were teammates of Bill Russell, and then after Russell retired, they were great teammates who contributed to championship teams in other eras who might not necessarily have put up major stats.
Yep, I agree. Well, Mike, any other observations on the Hall of Fame?
I'm sorry?
I just wonder if you've had any other observations on this year's Hall of Fame selections.
Like I said, you know what? We didn't mention the Bentley coach, Barbara Stevens, who, of course, one of the women who we're going to be inducted in. What a career she's had. I know that they went 35-0 in 2014. And actually, there's a local link to Barbara Stevens. The Masconomic girls coach, Shannon Kerwin, played for Barbara Stevens at Bentley. And, I'm glad they're recognizing a Division II coach, a women's coach, who's had, like, close to 1,000 wins or whatever it is, certainly has established a fantastic legacy at Bentley College.
That's great that you bring that up, and I wouldn't have thought of that either. That's tremendous. So what are you doing now that there's no hoops?
Well, we're waiting for – you know what? Right now, at this very moment, the Boston Celtics 1981 Game 7 against the Philadelphia 76ers for the Eastern Conference Championship is on, and I covered that game along with Gary Larrabee, your good friend, and radio. And of course, the Celtics won that game 91-90. I still remember Larry Bird hitting a bank shot with a minute left to put him up for good. And two great teams, and the personnel on both teams was fantastic.
All right, I'm going to put that game on and look for you guys. I'm going to see if I can spot you two.
Oh, we were definitely there. That was a great game.
All right. I got to go, guys. My daughter's calling me from Philadelphia. Mike, we'll do it again when we have more time, and it won't be as long between calls this time.
Thank you very much, guys. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Mike. I love it. You add so much to it. Thank you. Take care, Mike.
You too.
All right. Okay, Tim, I got to wrap it up here. Any other final thoughts?
No, great talking to Gary and Mike, as always. Always fun to do a lot of the reminiscing, taking it back a little bit for folks out there.
Yeah, and I want to thank Gus Bello and his voice. What a voice that kid has, talking with Bill Newell, and also to Jonathan Luters, who playing for the North Shore Navigators if we ever get this season underway. And we'll see. It could happen. Things are improving, if ever so slowly they are improving. So that takes care of that. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Tim, you stay safe.
You too, Rick.
Talk to you later. Good night. On behalf of Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. This has been North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com.